Episode number 77 of Gary King's Inconvenient Truths, where Gary presents video clips and stories I don't know are coming for my spontaneous and unrehearsed response. Gary, what do you got for me today?
I got a mixed bag. I didn't have as much time to sort them all out. So if it's not as coherent as normal, then I'm going to beg
We'll
for
survive.
forgiveness. So,
We'll survive.
all right, here we go.
Important election in the history of our country.
There are just 8 days left in what is the most important election of our lifetime.
I truly believe this is the most important election of our lifetime.
This election is the most important election in our lifetimes, no matter what generation you come from.
2008 is the most important election in our lifetime.
This is the most important election you've ever voted in your entire life.
Americans, this is the most important election of our lifetime.
All these choices make this one of the most important elections in our history.
In what will be, I am convinced, one of the most important elections we're likely to see for the next 50 years.
1996, in my opinion, is going to be the most important election of our lifetimes.
Is the single most important election in our lifetime.
This is the most important election in history.
This is the most important election in this nation in 50 years.
The most important of all choices will be made by the American people at the polls less than 3 months from tonight.
Asking the American people to make one of the most important decisions in their lifetime. Because I think this election is one of the most vital in the history of America.
This time, vote like your whole world depended on.
All right, Dr. Pezzer, I think you get the idea on that one. I guess they're all important.
Well, pretty amusing in retrospect. When Dick Cheney came on, see, he already knew 9/11 was in the works. Jay just had to get W and him in place to pull it off. Well, it was an Israeli-inspired op, of course, and the whole idea was to create a scenario that would draw American forces into the geopolitically sensitive region of the Middle East and use American military to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. And, of course, today we have Israel using America to provide weapons to slaughter the Palestinians and to, you know, try to convert Ukraine into the new Israel. It ain't working. But I'll tell you, a lot of people are dying, and it's very tragic, and that the United States should be on the wrong side of history again, Gary. That is truly tragic.
Absolutely. All right. We've got actually Lindsey Graham, and I think it's John McCain talking to the Ukrainians, say they're going to help them out. This is a few years back.
It was a very good year. We'd ride in limousines. We'd hide from the lights.
Admire the fact that you will fight for your homeland. Your fight is our fight. 2017 will be the year of offense. All of us will go back to Washington and we will push the case against Russia.
Ми всі повернемося до Вашингтону і ми будемо відстоювати санкції проти Росії.
Enough of a Russian aggression. It is time for them to pay a heavier price. Our fight is not with the Russian people, but with Putin. Our promise to you is to take your cause to Washington.
Наша обіцянка це те, що ми вашу боротьбу доведемо до Вашингтона.
Inform the American people of your bravery.
Проінформуємо американський народ про вашу відважність.
And make the case against Putin to the world.
І покажемо про докази проти Путіна усьому світу.
I believe you will win. I am convinced you will win, and we will do everything we can to provide you with what you need to win.
Я вірю в те, що виграєте, переможете. Я переконаний в тому, що ви переможете, і ми вам допоможемо всіма можливими засобами.
We have succeeded not because of equipment, but because of your courage.
Ви успішні не через обладнання, але через вашу відважність.
So I thank you, and the world is watching. And the world is watching because we cannot allow Vladimir Putin to succeed here, because if he succeeds here, he will succeed in other countries.
From the brim to the dregs, it poured sweet and clear. It was.
All right, Dr. Pesce, you get that one.
Oh, Gary, you got to let that play out. I love Frank. Don't you ever do that to me again.
Okay, when Frank Sinatra's playing, I'm going to let it go.
You don't eclipse a single note.
All right.
Two of the leading assholes of the Western world, John McCain, now departed this earth, Lindsey Graham. It's just disgusting to watch them in action. War hawks, never found a war they didn't like. Endless funding. I mean, how many have died? The conservative estimate has 500,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died, but it may be the actual number is closer to double that, Gary. And you can see early origins here. Putin is not the enemy. Russia is not the aggressor. Kiev was, after the coup of 2014, engineered by Victoria Nuland to boot out the Russia-friendly president of Ukraine and install Western puppet of whom Zelensky is a successor, began artillery barrages on the Donbass, loaded with ethnic Russians, Russian-friendly Russian speakers, and it was on the verge of an all-out effort to wipe them out. It was going to be a purge, a slaughter, a genocide akin to what's going on now in Gaza, Gary. When Putin realized he had to intervene, and he's been systematically defeating the Ukrainians right and left. And if the West thinks they can salvage the situation, they're sorely mistaken. So let's hope they don't throw more. It's inevitable they're going to do it anyway. More of our money and more of our equipment away in a futile effort, because it's a done deal. The war is already lost.
I didn't know you were a big Frank Sinatra fan there, Dr. Fetzer. I'll make sure next time. Okay, here we go. Nick Fuentes, he was on Alex Jones the other day for a solid hour.
Because that's just what Israel wants, and that's what they're trying to do. They're carrying out this butchery in Gaza, and they're provoking all their neighbors. And they are just hoping beyond hope. They are praying that somebody makes a move against them. They are slaughtering people in Gaza, and everyone thinks, how could they possibly do that? It's by design, it's part of it. It is a butchery in Gaza. That's part of the provocation. And they're antagonizing and striking all their neighbors because they are hoping that someone gives them a reason to expand the war. They want Iran to give them a reason to expand the war and to go and take out another one of their adversaries. In the meantime, the whole world is turning against them. Europe has turned against them. Russia and China are against them. The United States is against them. The people are against them. Candace Owens is against them. But Israel's hoping, they know that the world is turning against them, and they know that that's a problem. But they're hoping that Iran attacks first. Because if Iran attacks Israel, then the whole world is, they will have to patiently watch as Israel expands the war and kills other people elsewhere. Because then the subject changes. So it's kind of this tricky thing where everyone is waiting for Israel to tire itself out, to burn itself out. Hezbollah, in an extremely disciplined way, is restraining themselves so they don't launch any kind of major attack. So is Iran. The United States is holding back from really pressuring Israel. And they're hoping that the Netanyahu government topples and the operation in Gaza finishes before anybody makes a move against Israel. Because the moment that anyone makes a move against Israel, Israel will be fully justified to reply, and the clock, so to speak, resets back to zero. Right now, Israel has been beating a dead horse for 6 months. And everybody is saying, all right, enough, like you're done. Even their own people are ready to overthrow Netanyahu and get rid of this guy. And they want the war to be over and they want their hostages back. But the minute that Iran attacks Israel, it's like his alt is ready again. The bar is recharged. His rechargeable ability is back. The timer resets. They get to go out, and whoever attacks them, they get to go out and attack them back for as long as they need to. Israeli society's primed for it. International community has to watch it. So that seems to be the game that's happening right now.
Okay.
Well, I think Sheriff Huendy is a pretty smart guy, and he's got a pretty good grasp. I would be quite a bit more aggressive in the assailing Israel for the crimes against humanity that it's perpetrating. But if he was on Alex for an hour, that's good, because he is going to strengthen coverage in certain areas. Many have observed that Alex is reluctant to go there in matters involving Israel. So Nick Fuentes is going to do some good there for InfoWars. Glad you included the clip.
Mm-hmm. All right, so hope we're not beating a dead horse with this one here, but we're going to play it anyway. It's a five-minute clip.
There you have it. This is where the Biden regime is taking America. Trump will be no different, as the American Congress and its foreign policy is captured by the Israeli lobby, which operates illegally in contravention of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, applicable to agents inside America acting for foreign nations. The American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, operates in Israel's interests. It has captured the U.S. Congress and every significant politician. America has selections and not elections. Both Biden and Trump are vassals of Jewish and Israeli interests, and Israel interests are war. The politicians are seditious traitors. The American people matter, and not the interests of Jews and Israel, which are the same. The traitors go far beyond just Biden and Trump. These are senators who have taken Jewish lobby money by getting the AIPAC stamp of approval as supporters of Jewish and Israel's interests. We don't have time to show every congressional member, as almost all of Congress is implicated. 92 out of 100 members in the Senate are deemed AIPAC Jew and Israel friendly. They are either beholden, bought, bribed, blackmailed, or are ardent, loyal supporters of Israel. Here is Congress giving multiple standing ovations to Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu.
I want to thank you, Democrats and Republicans, for your common support for Israel, year after year, decade after decade. No matter on which side of the aisle you sit, you stand with Israel. This Capitol Dome helped build our Iron Dome. My country, Israel, the one and only Jewish state. I know that America stands with Israel. I know that you stand with Israel.
That was sickening to watch if you're American. A leader of a foreign nation making it evident who controls America. Shame, shame, shame on the cheerleaders you saw in America's own Congress. No wonder Netanyahu says America belongs to Israel and it will do what it's told. Jews and Israel have seized America. Many of the Congress people you saw hold dual American and Israeli citizenship, as are some of the faces here. For time expediency, we won't go into all or each congressional representative where it's a similar story. As you saw, it's sufficient to say Jews have captured the U.S. Congress for Jewish values, interests in Israel, and damn the American people. You can go to trackapac.com to see the conga line of elected congressional culprits whose constituents would be horrified if they knew they have a congressman or woman who are cheerleaders for Israel and Jewish interests. Ask your congressional representative if they're taking Jewish money or signed any AIPAC or Jewish lobby documents or questionnaires of support for Israel. Call, write, or email them and ask. America has fallen, and Israel is the tail wagging the American dog. The blood you see on Biden's hands is the same blood of all those in Congress disloyal to America and loyal to Israel. This betrayal is going to drag America into World War III, and with it, the well-being of every American and their lifestyle of abundance and plenty. Loss of freedoms and increased surveillance will follow, and the Fourth Amendment be damned as government pries into your affairs using contracted third-party proxies of the NSA to circumvent the Fourth Amendment preventing unlawful search and seizure. Add to this terrorists gravitating to American soil because of the odium America has earned for being an unquestioning handmaiden, financial funder, weapons supplier, and in combat theater an intelligence provider to Israel when it attacks its neighbors. Open borders and white replacement is a sign the American government has no intention of protecting the American homeland from invaders, yet defending Israel is paramount to the political sellouts. The blood from politicians' hands and the blood of Americans will metaphorically flow in the streets when Americans finally say enough is enough and demand Israel be cut loose, the border secured, and congressional grift and graft must cease. The endless money printing must stop and the borders be secured. Expel every single invader and their progeny, even if born in America. By their very presence in America, they are beneficiaries of a crime against the American people and the Constitution. They must be stripped of any anchor, baby, ill-gotten citizenship and have to go. Every last one of them. This prognostication foretells the inevitable fate for the invaders. The politicians have blood on their hands, and we see it as a result of their unequivocal support of Israel's perpetual crimes against humanity. Get rid of every traitorous and seditious politician and cut Israel loose to meet its fate. Americans don't want World War III. They don't want their children to die for Israel. Enough is enough. This call needs to become a roar by your sharing this message. Do it. Do it now.
Well, that was simply excellent. When I suggested Nick Fuentes needed to be a little more aggressive, this is what I meant, Gary. This is a perfect example. Yeah. Americans need to allow that message to penetrate deep into their brains, because this is a situation we are in. We are an occupied country by a tiny municipality that is seeking to rule the world. And if you have any doubt about it, go back to Isaiah 56:66, and you'll see the origin of the Zionist concept, the idea that the whole world, the whole globe, should be ruled from Jerusalem, that all the wealth of all the nations belongs to them, the chosen people, and that all kings must bow down before them or lose their crowns, literally their heads. Gary, it's a bad message, a sad message, but it's had profound impact historically, and we have to come to grips with it and do something about it.
Yeah, all my congressmen and senators from Louisiana and Mississippi were in that list right there. And it seemed like $100,000, $200,000 was enough to buy them out. You know, they showed the amount of money, you know, that they had taken.
Yes, that's just an excellent video.
Yeah. Okay, it sounds like you've been accused as an accomplice here by, you know who.
Two world wars, beautiful world wars. 6 million Jews, two-thirds of the Jews in Europe, murdered by the Nazi genocide.
Sure that humanity never, ever forgets. The Nazis
massacred 6 million Jews. Those who deny the Holocaust are an accomplice to this horrible evil and will never be silent.
You just like me because my daughter happens to be Jewish, right? And I've devoted so much time over my life to Israel. I've given a lot of money recently to Hatzalah, $100,000 emergency response. They do a fantastic. Israel is a very, very important ally of the United States, and we are going to protect them 100%. 100%. They've been our most reliable. It's our true friend over there, and we're going to protect Israel 100%. I love Israel and honor and respect the Jewish faith and tradition. For me, respect and reverence for Judaism is personal. My daughter Ivanka and my son-in-law Jared are raising their children in the Jewish faith. My administration will stand side by side with the Jewish people and Israel's leaders to continue strengthening the bridges that connect not only Jewish Americans and Israelis, but also all Americans and Israelis.
I recommend take the vaccines. I did it. It's good. Take the vaccines.
We have to get the people of our country, of this country, to love Israel more. I have to tell you that. We have to do it. We have to get them to love Israel more. They don't love Israel enough. You know that.
In this moment, we must be crystal clear. We stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. We will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself. Let there be no doubt. The United States has Israel's back. We will make sure the Jewish and democratic state of Israel can defend itself today, tomorrow, as we always have. It's as simple as that.
Simple as that, Gary, namely that Trump is just as much an Israeli puppet as Biden, maybe even more so. I shudder to think. And when he talks, honestly, I increasingly believe that Donald Trump himself is Jewish. He seems to me to have all the traits. He's got all the loyalties. He's given all the benefits to Israel, more so than any other president in our history. And I'm now tremendously concerned, given the recent assaults he's made, verbal attacks on the protesters on college campuses across the nation, or objecting to genocide. What could be more appropriate? What could be more praiseworthy? What could be more needed in this country at the time? So, you know, I'm very, very troubled with Trump. I was such a strong supporter until he called into Hannity and supported the genocide. His only complaint, they weren't killing the Palestinians fast enough, Gary. That was Trump's complaint. You got to get it done, but you got to get it done quickly. Kill them all. Just do it as soon as you possibly can. Very disturbing, Gary. I'm not happy about this at all. Not one bit.
With you 100%, Dr. Fetzer, on that one. All right, here's how we got here. Agenda 21. This is when Nancy was a little bit younger.
The Earth Summit Environmental Leadership Act, as this is known, presents us with an opportunity to follow up on the important work of the Earth Summit to develop its blueprint, Agenda 21, for global environmental action. HCON Res 353 outlines a comprehensive national strategy for sustainable development in accordance with the principles of Agenda 21 to be coordinated under the leadership of a specific office and the direction of a high-level government official. The resolution also urges the United States to identify and initiate further agreements to protect the global environment and to support the creation of a high-level United Nations Sustainable Development Commission headed by an Undersecretary General. Third and lastly, the President is urged to report to Congress on the progress made on the with this action. HCON Res 353 is supported by the administration. I have been in contact with the appropriate offices of the State Department and have incorporated their suggestions into the resolution. The 71 co-sponsors in this, of this measure include one half the members of the Foreign Affairs Committee and all of the House delegates to the Earth Summit. It is also supported by the major United States non-governmental organizations concerned with the environmental issues. The Earth Summit presented world leaders with an opportunity that should not be lost. We must now embark on a new course that will sustain our planet and its resources for the benefit of future generations. This resolution calls on the United States to assert its leadership to achieve this goal. I urge my colleagues to support this resolution. Thanks again to the members of the Foreign Affairs Committee for their recognition of the importance and timeliness of this resolution. We must make the promise of Rio a reality.
Okay.
Well, there's a scummy political figure who's become incredibly rich while she's been in office, promoting a green agenda. This was among his very first manifestations, this talk about sustainability. Because, oh, we haven't had the resources on Earth to sustain life for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, what do they think is suddenly changing? It's all propaganda, Gary. It's all intended actually to reduce the number of human beings on planet Earth. It's an objectionable agenda. It has no scientific foundation. And this is the rich working to make themselves richer and ever more powerful at the expense of ordinary human beings. Disgusting.
Okay, this clip wasn't loud enough, so I attempted to boost up the volume. I want to get your take on the definition of liberalism. 6 minutes.
Liberalism explained. To understand liberalism, you need to understand three principles. The first is the Pareto principle. It was named after its founder, the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto, back in 1895. He noticed that people in society seemed to divide naturally into what he calls the vital few, or the top 20% in terms of intelligence and integrity, and the trivial many, or the bottom 80%. To break this down into vulgar language, it means 80% of the population are losers. That doesn't mean they are bad people. They are just not very smart, not very creative, not very good looking, not very athletic, and not very motivated. Our society has lived with the 80% losers for thousands of years, and everyone generally got along, and it didn't matter too much how many losers there were, because the 20% were able to run a functioning society without relying on their input. But this is only part of the explanation. To understand the second principle behind liberalism, you need to know the difference between envy and jealousy. Jealousy can be said to be a desire for another person's property. A young man can see another man driving a nice car and think he would like a car like that. Or see another man dating a beautiful woman and think he would like a beautiful woman like that. Now, even losers could work an extra shift, do some overtime hours, cut personal expenses, and buy a nice car too. Even a loser could cut down on his caloric intake and do a little exercise. And with a shiny new car, he could also date a nice-looking girl. For most of the last few hundred years, the 80% losers were not too resentful, because they could, if they wanted it badly enough, have the same material things the 20% had. But envy is, without a doubt, the worst of the seven deadly sins. Envy could be said to be a desire for another person's qualities. These are qualities losers can never have. A person with a 90 IQ can never develop an IQ of 130. A short person can never become tall. A fat and ugly old woman can never become a beautiful maiden. What makes envy so deadly is the tendency of the envious to destroy what they can't be. The man who is envious of another's car will go at night and slash the tires, key the paint job, and smash the lights. A man envious of a beautiful woman will throw acid in her face so no one can enjoy her beauty. Those who are envious of another's proud and noble history will tear down their statues, paint over their murals, and burn their history books. The third principle behind liberalism is a group of psychopaths who have studied human psychology for thousands of years. They go by many different names. Today, we know them as Bolshevists, communists, and socialists. This group of psychopaths have always envied and hated the 20% and have sought to destroy the achievements that they could never aspire to. Because of their knowledge of psychology, they know the easiest way to destroy a civilization is to weaponize the losers. It is childishly simple to do this. They appeal to the losers' innate tendencies to jealousy and envy. They tell the losers, why should you do an extra shift to buy a car? After all, that's more work. Easier would be to have the government just take the car from the guy who earned it and give it to the loser. They tell the fat and ugly women, why bother eating less and bathing more when they can just demonize the beautiful women and handsome men that want nothing to do with them and get them fired and ostracized from society. That way, they'll only be surrounded by fat, ugly people, and there won't be any good-looking people around to trigger their envy. And on it goes. The psychopaths tell the losers they're victims, and if they hand all power to the state, the government will rob at gunpoint all the wealth of the 20% and redistribute it to the losers. Of course, this never happens. Whatever the government robs goes straight into the pockets of the psychopaths, who in turn blame the 20%, which in turn fuels the rage and hatred of the losers until they completely lose their minds and burn it all down and murder the 20%. This is how civilizations die. So this then is liberalism, a cult for losers who have been inflamed to psychotic levels of envy and hatred by a group of professional psychopaths for the purpose of destroying everything good or innocent or beautiful or holy.
Okay, Dr. Fetzer.
Well, I wish I could say that misses the mark, but I think it's a little too close for comfort. That's a very troubling, discerning presentation, Gary. The role of the less able, the function of envy, gaining more power and control for bad reasons and malevolent purposes, very, very disturbing. That one is worth reviewing more than once. Glad you added it today.
Okay. Not sure this one belongs in the show, but we talked about porch pirates for a little while, and they're getting pretty clever. 15-second clip. If I can get it going. Okay. How about that mess?
Interesting. The thief was dressed up as like what, a fire hydrant or
Well,
a garbage bag, so it could go over there and just get over the package and pick it up and walk off.
yeah, I thought it
And
was I thought it's when you're in the streets, and they're doing work, they'll put these things out so the cars will go around them. That's what it looked like to me.
amusing little ditty, Gary.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'm going to go ahead and do it. You would think that the greatest basketball player of all time would be a black guy, wouldn't you? But it wasn't. It was a guy from Louisiana named Pistol Pete. And I want to show that. Here we go.
The Hawks are down by one. Maravich brings his hair down court. His hair looks right. It breaks left. It breaks free. Amazing! Great control. Now his hair comes.
sir. All that behind the back, flipping through the legs and all that, Pistol Pete Maravich.
Yeah, but Gary, you could have highlight clips of Bill Russell or Jerry West or Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson, and he'd look spectacular.
Yeah, I think they came after.
Maybe my all-time favorite was actually Bill Russell, who made defense so important in basketball. I'll say this. The game today is not the game of yesterday. You can see a LeBron James will walk, take two or three steps, and they're never called. There's a whole lot of, you know, inferior play that passes in his praise with superlatives today. But, of course, I'll grant you this. Pistol Pete was among the all-time greats, but we could argue endlessly about who is the greatest. It's lots of fun, and mostly it's pleasant because it does not involve politics.
Yeah, I'm going to have one next week with Marvin Hagler. He was one of the first people to go down with the COVID shot, and I definitely want to do that one next time. All right, here is a little clip from a Dragnet series a long time ago.
You've been smoking marijuana?
Marijuana's illegal, I know that.
That's right.
For now. In a couple of years, things may change when all the kids grow up and start wearing ties and going to the polls. Marijuana's gonna be like liquor, packaged and taxed and sold right off the shelf.
I doubt it, Mr. Shipley.
Look, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it seems to me there must be better things for cops to do than chase down wild rumors about something as innocent as marijuana. Why don't you go after the big bad guys, the heroin peddlers? I won't argue with you about them. They should be stopped.
That's right. We'd like to put them out of business. That's why we're here.
What do you mean?
We're trying to keep them from getting a new customer.
There's a big difference between marijuana and hard narcotics.
Yeah, but it's only a small step.
And everybody who takes a drink is going to be an alcoholic. We know that's not true, don't we? Let's face it, we're on opposite sides of the fence, and there's nothing we can do about it. For you, if there's a law against it, it's wrong, black and white. I just don't see things that way, that's all.
Well, you ought to give it a try, fella. It might keep you out of jail.
Maybe. But we'll change the law someday, even though your friend here thinks we won't. Believe me, it's a new world. Your laws are as outdated as bustles. Laws are going to have to be changed to keep pace with the new morality. They'll change or we'll have to break them.
Okay.
Well, I grew up with Dragnet, Jack Webb, and all that, you know, but I would say the argument is all on the side of loosening up laws against marijuana. It's been improperly classified as a class one drug along with opium and heroin, which is completely absurd. Standardized, legalized, tax, bonanza for states like Colorado, which are enjoying. I 100% am on the side of those who want to see marijuana made widely available. We'd have a more mellow, happy, relaxed society, Gary. And in fact, I think marijuana even has medicinal properties. I'm not talking purely about medicinal marijuana. I'm talking about marijuana for recreational purposes. It ought to be widely available, as I say, standardized, regulated. You'd have to be at least 18 as you would to buy tobacco products, or even 21 with alcohol. But that is clearly where we're moving. And it's, to me, very strange we haven't got there faster, because I think the case for marijuana legalization is simply overwhelming.
Yeah, right here down the street in Mississippi, there's dispensaries. However, there's one catch. You have to give up your gun rights, your right to carry a gun. How about that?
That's frankly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. That's the catch. I looked into it myself. Okay, here's a woman on TikTok. And let's see what she's got to say.
I always felt uncomfortable with white people who pretend like they care about black people and who were like posting Black Lives Matter stuff. And I never understood it until now. All those white people were Jews. Now it makes sense. It always gave performative, and I could never put my finger on it because I was like, I don't want to be that black person that, you know, I see white people are making an effort and for some reason I'm uncomfortable with it. What the heck is that about? It's because they were Jews the whole time. There's no way they believe in freedom and liberation when they've been casually enslaving the Palestinian people for over 75 years and counting. They've been promoting that, endorsing that, protecting all of their leaders who have been doing that. Like, there's no way in hell they actually believed that black people deserve freedom. They never were for our liberation. And now I get it. It's because they're Jews. Like, these people, when I see racists now, I think they're all Jews. Just had an epiphany. I need to go to Tiffany's. Now it makes sense. Now it makes sense why I never felt comfortable with them. Now it makes sense why there was always something that was just there that was nagging at my soul. Like, they're lying. But I couldn't place it, you know? And I didn't want to say anything out loud because I was like, I don't want to seem like I'm holding the movement back, but I'm telling y'all, they're lying. There's no way these people actually want freedom for us. And it always makes sense now why they would always come in and try to find some way to water down the movement and to play some sort of victim and to destroy the movement from the inside out. It makes sense now because for so many years, black people and the Palestinian people have been aligned and have been allies trying to help each other get freedom, trying to get liberation together. Now it makes sense why they've been so invested in the black community and black movements and black progress. And they've been doing everything to keep black people from ever moving forward. We get it now. You know, they don't want us to move forward because of the allyship we always had with Palestinian people, and because they can't continue the hypocrisy anymore. If they are saying, yeah, black people deserve freedom because we're human beings, it is our right, we have God-given free will, and y'all never had the right ever, and you will never have the right to take our free will away from us, and they can acknowledge that with black people, then why the hell can't they acknowledge that with the brown people, the Palestinian people that they've been enslaving for 75 years and counting? You know, the hypocrisy just wouldn't add up. So it's all been performative this whole time. It's all been performative. And now I get it. And like I said, when I see racist people now, I immediately think you're probably a Jew. Yeah, you're probably one of those.
All right, she got it right.
Well, I thought that was very nice, very gentle, very thoughtful. I like that a lot, Gary, actually. Talk about a soft sell, nothing heavy-handed about that. Just a young woman putting two and two together and having an epiphany. And I got to say, she got there a whole lot earlier than did I, because my epiphanies have only been in the last few years. And I've been startled to realize how much about the world I had yet to understand. So I compliment her. TikTok has turned out to be a great bastion of freedom of speech. It may be Chinese-owned, but they're not interfering. They're not censoring. And they're upsetting, you know, figures on both the left and the right because too much truth is getting out. I celebrate TikTok, and I commend that young woman for a very well-done presentation. She's spot on, Gary. Spot on.
All right, here we go. I'm not sure about this clip.
To bring some love in here today. Oh, Mother, Father, we don't need to escalate.
War is not the answer, for only love can conquer.
Find a way to bring some love in here today. Oh, pick your lights and pick your sides. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, be your light and be your sign. Don't part
what's going on? Just tell me what's going on.
Okay.
Well, we're all Palestinians now, Gary. At least every decent human being on the face of planet Earth. Just turns out there are not a lot of savages among us who wield a lot of power. And to watch the Israelis dancing in joy over their slaughter of Palestinians is just ghastly. Ghastly. That's the word, Gary. Ghastly.
All right, you got two more clips left. Let me make sure I get the right one. This one, just one second. I'll go ahead and do this one. And then we've got our final clip coming up after this one. All right. White House is going to declare a climate emergency.
The White House is considering declaring a national climate emergency to unlock federal powers and stifle oil development. That's according to Bloomberg. Meanwhile, the administration is announcing several projects this Earth Week. The plans include solar energy conservation, clean water, green transportation, and cutting pollution. For some analysis, we want to bring on Melissa Lott. She's a professor at Columbia University's Climate School. She also hosts The Big Switch podcast, which explains how to rebuild our energy systems. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me what a climate emergency is and what that might entail.
So when we talk about the potential for the president to declare a climate emergency, what it's saying is, you know what, there's a national emergency going on, and I need extra powers to be able to respond to it to protect the U.S. This is a contentious decision if it's made. This discussion has come up many times. But if it is made, then the president would have additional powers in the short term, almost immediately.
And what might those powers look like, and who would be the first to be nervous about new powers the president might have? In other words, I mean, would it be fossil fuel companies? How might that work out?
Yeah, so if the president does this, he would have access to a lot of different powers. I know what's being talked about is the ability to control how we're able to sell fossil fuels. Are we able to export it? Are we able to send it to different parts of the world? Now, obviously, the countries, the organizations that depend on those exports, they would be concerned about it, as would companies. But that's not all that the president can do. The president can do a lot to bolster up the manufacturing, the production of clean energy technologies, and combined with some other powers that he has or that he could take advantage of, he could move the needle when it comes to climate change and emissions. So it's a mixed bag. I will say, when you talk to companies, uncertainty is the worst. If I can plan around it, I'm happy, even if it's maybe not the outcome I wanted. So the uncertainty of, is this going to happen, when might it happen, and how might it be implemented, is a stress point.
Let me ask you about the Climate Corps. How do you understand the Climate Corps and what it's supposed to do? It obviously echoes of FDR.
Yeah.
What are we getting from the Climate Corps, which the president discussed yesterday?
Yeah, so the Climate Corps is trying to address, or at least as an outsider, as a professor at a university when I'm studying it, it's trying to address a couple different things. One, we do not have the workforce that we need if we want to reduce emissions, if we want to clean up pollution. We don't have people trained in the different skill sets that we need, and we need them very quickly if we're going to respond to climate change, which is already happening and already affecting our health. So as a result of that, how do we train up those people at the same time, show folks that there are opportunities for all different skill sets, all different backgrounds to contribute positively in their communities, in their states?
Last question. We are in a presidential year. Let's amend, and I'm not going to ask you about the political thing, except this, try and do it this way. There are going to be voters who care about the climate.
Yes.
How do those voters evaluate a sitting president and what he has done and what he should have done in the context of a world in which there's a lot of partisanship and where you can't just wave a wand as a president, how should those voters think about how they're going to evaluate, if they care about climate, how they should evaluate the incumbent president?
Yeah, so when you look at the president, a president has a certain number of powers. I mean, you can go back to Schoolhouse Rock days, you know, and who's got the division of powers and where. The president has certain ones that he can implement, that he can take advantage of, soft powers and hard powers. So which ones has he done successfully? So you can look at the Inflation Reduction Act. You can look at other policies that have become law and his role there, but also in terms of executive orders, what initiative he's taken. One example of those is Justice 40. So how are we making sure benefits go to communities that have been disadvantaged and been underinvested in the past? How has the president actually addressed that? So it's a combination of things, realizing the president in this country does not have all the powers, only has some of them.
Melissa Lott from Columbia University's Climate School. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dr. Fesser.
Help me unimpressed. The whole climate thing is a massive swindle. There's no correlation between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the temperature of Earth over 600 million years. In fact, CO2 actually is indispensable to life. It's involved in the production of air and water, without which life is impossible, and actually has cooling effects on Earth in three or four dimensions. So you got a lot of money going in to promote a lot of propaganda that's going to the solar and wind and other industries that are ultimately destined to fail. Just as the electric vehicle movement has fallen flat on its face at great expense, it's really sad to see how much the public becomes played by powerful interests, Gary, that do not have what's good for humanity at heart, but rather enriching themselves and making themselves more powerful and influential, alas.
I agree. All right, we're going to close it out with this particular clip here. IT-77.
For you were my friend. come play with you, with me, baby. You'll see what we shall see.
My goodness, there's some fine women in Russia.
Absolutely joyful. There's my nominee, not just for Man of the Year or Man of the Decade, Man of the Century, Vladimir Putin, Gary. I admire him beyond words. It was so out of character, so unexpected, and so spectacular. Oh, man. What a way to end the show, my friend. I can't thank you enough for playing that.
All right. Okay, this has been IT77. We'll see you guys next week. Hope you enjoyed it.